and welcome to the Stretch Podcast. My name is Lebupule, your host. My guests and I will be having conversations on matters of self-development, emotional well-being, spiritual growth, and overall transformation. These are guests whose work, expertise, knowledge, and wisdom has inspired and moved me tremendously, and I hope that they inspire and move you too. Here is another episode of the Stretch Podcast. Hey, just before the episode, this is a quick reminder to say if you're hearing this, it means you are not yet a subscriber of the Stretch Podcast. We don't run adverts on the Stretch Podcast. Our focus is on giving you great conversations with equally great guests. So our income for the podcast is directly from you, the listener, you, the subscriber. We would love for you to join the subscriber base if you love and value what we do here. In the meantime, you will get a partial episode. We trust that you will love it enough to subscribe. Hey, hey, Dumelang, Dumelang, my friends. It is I, Lebupule, your host, with another episode of the Stretch Podcast. And today we have the Beyonce of the money coaches, Vangile Makwakwa herself. And today we are talking about her book. I mean, this is such an apt book. And I have to pull myself towards myself to not give you a 45-minute long intro, because I could do that. So I'm going to not do that at all. I'm going to be as short as I possibly can, because honestly, if I can start by telling you what this book has done to me, there won't be a point of you listening to our conversation, because I'm just going to rob it. So I'm not going to go there. We are talking about her book, and her book is called What is Your Money Personality? Changing the Way Black Families Manage Their Finances. But you know, it does a lot more than that. It one of the things I tell her in the conversation is that what I love about the book is that it does two things. It introduces people to archetypes. Now, people in the coaching field, coaches, healers, therapists, psychologists, we talk a lot about archetypes. A lot of stretchers know what archetypes are. But people who don't know, who are not privy to that world, when they hear the word archetype, they already think we're talking woo, 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 woo stuff, or we're talking things that are just far-fetched. Archetypes are, in the most lamest of explanation, are personalities. If you like, and it's not, but you know, to make it simple, it's a personality. In the book, Vangile talks about, you know, the personality of a fixer. That's an archetype. You know, the people who like to fix things, the sweet one, which is an archetype that I have. A person, the sweet one, the sweetest person that you've ever met, the sweetness of her is an archetype. A mother is an archetype, and so on. So I'm not going to go with that route, but I just wanted to make it easy for you who's listening for the first time and you're hearing what, because her book is really archetype heavy, and if you're going to pick it up, you must be ready for that. But what it does, what the book does, is that it simplifies and makes understanding archetypes manageable. But it does a lot more than that. I mean, the book just, oh my God, one of the things that I told her in the conversation is that for the first time, I'm reading a book about Black families and money, or Black people and money, that also has some form of solutions. You know, it hit me like, you know, like a lightning bolt that, oh my God, there's solutions. Because it's easy to get trapped in, Black people and money, Black people, honestly, solutions, like we can solve this problem. Hopefully we can solve it in some of our lifetimes. I mean, I think we are that generation that are supposed to solve a lot of this poverty and this money thing, where hopefully by the time I reach 79, which is like next year, really. side note, I'm recording this episode on a Friday on the 26th. And tomorrow, which is a Saturday, it's the 27th, it's my birthday. So, yeah. So I'm very, very, very close to 79. But hopefully, by the time we reach those ages, both 79 and 80, we are not talking about black tax, guys. We are not talking about one person in the family who can take people out of poverty. We are talking about some of the things that we also have built. We are not only talking about the Motsepe and six others. We are talking about a whole generation that is actually lifting black people out of a certain class. I nearly said lower class, but a poverty class, and we are moving onto a completely different class. That is what this book has a potential to do. Now, Vangile, for those of you who don't know her, you'd have to be living under a rock, or you'd have to not know me at all, know us at all. But Vangile needs no introduction, really, in my world. She is the first Black South African woman who introduced me, or who I met, who was talking about healing money or healing our money stories. Prior to her, I was like most of you, just knowing of the American ones, you know, Bo, Susie Orman, you know, that whole Oprah era of people who were helping us with money, Bo Robert Kiyosaki and all that. And when I met Vangile in 2014, guys, I mean, this is like a full circle moment that in 2024, in January, we are talking about her third book, and we are at it again. And I met her early 2014, maybe not January, but quite early in 2014. So I've known this girl for 10 years, and I've seen her build and grow her company, Wealthy Money. And I'm going to read her bio just now. And so she was the first ever young black woman who was saying, "Hey guys, you know, there's this thing about money that is that is linked to our emotions, our spirituality, our ancestry, and so on and so forth." And I fell in love with her. I mean, you know the story with me and Van. She also became an active teaching coach at Stretch School when I started it in 2017. When we were still on Facebook, she was the weekly regular coach, helping and teaching my student with money. And she's been on this journey, and I've seen her grow. I've seen her start a podcast. I've seen her get into property, which is one of her biggest loves. You know, property is called the real estate because, you know, it is where the money really is. And as much as it bores me to tears personally, but I know that property, you can never go wrong with it. So she and a fellow student who's also a friend of mine, Mizo, started the Property Magicians podcast. And Vangile also has her own podcast called Money Magicians Podcast. So I've seen her over the years grow and become this massive figure who is always on media, who is written about, who's interviewed, go with the ENCA, go with the 702, hey, Dibalantonina. So it was such a pleasure to catch up with her. Prior to our conversation, we had met here in Tiny Town in the Karoo. She was passing by with her fiance, Panya. Yo, Vangila, I mentioned his name, sorry. They were passing through as they were traveling to Cape Town, and we had lunch, and I really, really just enjoyed watching them together. I enjoyed seeing Van with him, you know, how she was contained, you know. Well, as a life coach, and I always like to see people in other people's presence. For an example, I like to see a woman in her boyfriend or husband's presence. And sorry guys, as a coach, we see a lot of things that are nuanced and all that. And it was just a marvel to see how the Van that I know, who will talk about the moon and the stars and the ancestors, you know, all the things that are woo, just continue to talk like that. And there was a moment where we completely ignored Khanya, and we were at it, me and her. And I'm like, oh gosh, she found the one. I mean, this is it. This is it. They are engaged after all. You're hearing it here first. And I'm mentioning it because she does mention it in the conversation. So Vangile is engaged to a wonderful, wonderful man called Khanya. And very soon, so I can attend the wedding. I'm not going to share much about what we said in the conversation because honestly, it will become a 45-minute intro. Already, it's quite long. Already, I'm sure some of you are fast-forwarding. I know you're fast-forwarding to get to the actual topic. Just bear with me. One day, guys, there's going to be a time where I don't do these long intros. And I say this with authority, because there is a podcast host that I subscribe to his podcast. Hint, hint, nudge, nudge. I subscribe with money to his podcast. And he used to do these gigantic intros, like these 20-minute long intros, 25-minute long. You know, sometimes we'd really just scroll to the topic because like he's going on and on. And then one day he stopped. You know, he stopped. He would start his conversations with his podcast episodes with, hi, today I'm speaking to Vangile, and then read Vangile's bio and then get into the topic. Can you believe that we wrote back? I was one of the people that wrote, you know, like, what happened to the intros? So I'm saying all this to say, in as much as maybe these intros are a bit too much and they're getting under your skin, you're going to miss them one day and I'll stop. One day I'll stop. For now, they're there. For now, they're there. Okay. Let me read Vangile Makwaka. In fact, before that, I wanted to tell you why I can't get into the conversation, what we covered in the conversation. We talk about the book and we start part one with her family dynamic. And she generously shares. But then on minute 32 or something, the conversation turns. It switches direction altogether. It just directs itself. And it turns the table on me. And I remember just feeling, after my conversation with her, just feeling like, oh my God, I think we should edit all that part out. But then I remembered that one of my biggest wounds, guys, is the money wound. I have a gaping money wound, which I am healing it. I am healing it. But it's always important to mention it, that it's there. You know, it's like how thoughts are. You know, when you have such a big wound that even after it's healed, you walk with a limp. And not that it's painful, not that it's septic or anything, but you walk with a limp. So then when the tables turned, I understood then that the tables turned because the money issue is one of my biggest wounds. And I also understood that it's not mine as me now alone. It's very ancestral. It's very much in my bloodline. And maybe that's why it's so hard for me to just carry it and to deal with it, because I am not just dealing with Lebupule as an individual. I am healing an entire bloodline of the wound of money that we had. I mean, Coach Fezi mentioned it as well in one of our conversations. If you listen to me and Coach Fezi, and all the money coaches that were here sort of attest to that, maybe not on the record. Vangile herself once told me that, no, but it seems like it's probably not just about you because of how intense it makes you feel. I mean, I shiver and I shake when it comes to finances. A little bit better now, but it used to be really, really hard. And so the conversation turns the tables, and then Vangile gets me to talk. And then I talk. As if that's not enough, the conversation takes another turn around minute 50 or so, where my mother comes through. Yes, my mom came through to the conversation. Once again, I'm saying this with calm, with authority, because I do know that my premonitions and my psychic abilities are growing. My mom showed up in the conversation. I'm getting goosebumps as I'm saying this, which is another confirmation that yes, it's true. And my mom did what she needed to do. And after she did that, the conversation went on. So only those of you who are subscribed will get to access that part. But it is the most profound conversation ever. Up there, one of the top tens right there. Okay. Now let me read her bio and then give you the conversation. Literally after the bio, you are listening to me and her. Vangile Makwakwa is an entrepreneur, money trauma coach, and an author of three books, including Heart, Mind, and Money. I have that book, I have read it. Using emotional intelligence for financial success. She has an honors degree from UCT and an MBA from Simmons School of Management in Boston. Vangile is the founder of WealthyMoney.com, a company dedicated to helping women heal ancestral money trauma and improve their financial well-being. And she hosts the Money Magic podcast and the Property Magicians podcast. And all her social media links and an email are all there on the show notes. And if you're interested in listening to the rest of the episode, there is a link for you to listen to the rest of the episode on the show notes. I hope you do, because this is really, I mean, I say this about all the episodes, but this is really one of those that you really just want to do that. Without further ado, I give you my conversation with Vangile. Hello, Van. We've hit record because I can see that if I don't hit record, we're not gonna start. Welcome back to the Stretch Podcast. And I don't know if you remember this, but you were my very, 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 very first guest when I was still
Yes,
doing the solo. You
remember
remember?
you
We were speaking over the phone in George at the retreat, and the people loved your conversation. To this day, it still pops up on the top 10. You know, you use Podbean for
Seriously,
your recording,
you've
right?
told me this before.
Yes, it's
Yes.
still top. Like randomly, how Vanilla conversation is still on the top 10. You know, it would come up and go, come up and go. So people absolutely adore you. And the other day I posted about our meetup and everyone was so excited. And I remember people saying, when are you interviewing her about the book? And I'm like, duh, guys, of course it's coming. So welcome back, beloved. I'm gonna call you beloved because you seem to be the
Thank
beloved.
you. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Lebo.
Well, you know, I said a little prayer before we have this conversation because I can actually feel the emotions coming up again. Because this book is such an offering, Ven. You have served us such a big feast, but it's a feast that has everything. So it has the other stuff that are very, very healthy that we don't like broccoli, that we are going to avoid. Dr. Brené Brown likes to say when she talks to people who wrote books that there was a moment where I just wanted to throw it across the room. Yeah, there were many parts where I'm like, oh my God, this girl. So thank you for honoring the voice to write. And I want to ask, first question is,
Thank
why
you.
did you write it and why now?
Everyone asks why I wrote this book, but let me be honest. Obviously, you know, when I'm like being interviewed on the media and everything, I have to come up with an answer that is palatable to the
I
public.
know. Hence, podcasts are such a great thing.
But with you, I can just tell the truth and just
Thank
say
you.
I was guided to.
Yeah.
I didn't. You know, I talk about the fact that I've been doing work with clients for years, as you well know. But I woke up one day during COVID in 2020. I will never forget. And I just heard the archetypes and what was coming up. And I saw the images of clients and family members, blah, blah, blah. And I just started writing. Then I posted it on Facebook. Kept being in my psyche. And you know, when you're reading something, I'd get told, bookmark this. So I started a whole notes app with like hundreds of things. And I was like, oh God, what am I doing to myself? So then sometimes I would label them and just not really understand what I was doing. But I just trusted that process. So I just wrote it. I started this book and wrote it because I was guided to. And what's so funny is I'll tell people I'm working on my second book. I had no freaking clue what my second book was, but I knew it had to do with the archetypes, you know?
Yeah.
But when I looked at this thing and what I could see had to happen, I was like, ah, it feels like a lot of work. This thing is big, right?
Yeah.
So I was like, ah, I can't start. And then out of the blue, Penn McCarthy contacted me and was like, we want to offer you a publishing deal. Tell us what you're writing. They didn't know anything about the archetypes, nothing. They just said, we've been following you on social media. We read your content. We believe it's so relevant. It's nothing anyone is talking about.
Yeah.
What are you working on? What are you writing about? And the first thing they said, as long as it's not your traditional budgeting, expenses, tactical, how-to book, we are in. If you bring up that, we are out. Yeah. But send us a manuscript. So I sent them, I kid you not, the editor actually reviewed it and questioned if I was a writer or not. It was gibberish. I sent them gibberish. I just sent them whatever I had. You know how I operate. I just sent them those notes where, like, one sentence starts, there's no full stop, another. I sent them that. I was like, this is what I'm working on. Now, but they'll see to finish. Through that, they were able to see that there's something there.
There's I don't know how.
But the editor I work with, Uzodwa, is just, she just knew there was something there. She just said, there is, this book is going to be incredible. And I believe it's going to be a topic for a long time.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's going to be a topic in South Africa. And she just said, but then they sent me the editor's notes and they were like, but we have work to do.
Yes, I can imagine. God bless editors. I think editors are just incredible people. Yes, they will drive you crazy, but they know what they're doing. What I love about the book, and I told you this when we were having lunch, is that it does so many things. Number one, it introduces people to archetypes. Basically, it demystifies what an archetype is. I mean, you and I, in the teaching and coaching space, so we talk a lot about archetypes and shadows and shadow archetype and golden archetype. Somehow people think it's too woo-woo stuff. Meanwhile, it's actually not. Being a runner is an archetype. Being a vampire is an archetype. Because you could have touched on 100 archetypes. But it introduces people to what archetypes are and it makes it easy to digest. But then it also just talks about the interesting dynamics of Black families, which is what this part one is going to really be about. Why, for me, this book is important then is that nobody, we like to talk about Black texts. We like to talk about how Black people are poor. We like to talk about how there's always one who is wealthy who will go to the suburbs and forget about the family. But we've never spoken about, so manje, how do we go about sorting that out?
Yeah.
And I think that's what you are doing, which is like, how come no one actually thought about the fact that we can actually solve Linda Abba? That's why I think it's big. That's why I think the book should be, and my prayer for you and my wish for you and my blessing to you is that may it reach shores overseas, may it be written in different languages, may it help us because you are doing God's work. This is God's work. You know, so that's I needed to let you know so that you feel it from my heart to your heart.
Thank you, my darling.
Now I have a ton of notes here, and I want you to share your family dynamic. I mean, it's there in the book, it's there in your introduction. I'm particularly interested in your mom, your uncle, and you. Because you're the destroyer, you ran. Just share for the sake of the listener who doesn't know you from a bar of soap, which would surprise me because everybody knows you. But talk about your family dynamic and money.
Yeah, so let me start by saying I am a destroyer archetype, and destroyers are here to live out the family trauma. Yes. And let me just say, like, I know that one of the reasons between my mom and myself, it's one of the reasons the family didn't last. And I can say this, that I haven't spoken to my mom's family since I was like, really, truly sat down and spoken since I was like 16. So you can imagine what I did in my first 16 years. And I think as a teenager, I was much more intense than I am as an adult. I've mellowed down so much. Like, I am literally a tenth of who I was as a teen, you know? My mom is a fixer, but also secondary archetype destroyer. Fixers are usually breadwinners, right? Always, not usually, always the breadwinners. They are the ones that can take a family from one class to the next class. My mom once showed me where she grew up in a one room, where she and her four siblings and her parents slept in one room. By the time I was born, my mother had built a house with four bedrooms, waiting room, two living rooms, everything, like a big, beautiful house. She had built her own little rondavel outside. She had started pig farming, 300 pigs, and had a boutique. So that's what she had achieved from the time she was, like, by the time she left home to become a nurse to the time when she had me. So I was born into the only house in the village that had electricity, because she insisted, like, she would have a generator, and she had the generator running. I don't even know when electricity came to the village, because my mother had already sorted all that out, you know? So that is the power of fixers. And I see fixers continuously. So my mom looked after her family, but over time, and these, we don't talk about these things. She also looked after my cousins and her siblings' kids. And then we were born. And I think she had a hard time. Like, when I talked to my dad, who's also a fixer, but I think also very much a sweet one. So he's like in between there. By the time we were born, we actually ended up, my mom was then looking after her siblings, their kids, my grandmother, my great-grandmother, which she didn't mind looking after my grandmother and my great-grandmother. But then there was this thing that all her money now and her attention has to go to her kids. That becomes a problem. And I think she didn't tell her sibling, her family, right? And she didn't stop it, right? So she continues, and somehow there's a lot of factions. She felt like all her energy is being taken by her family. But I think she didn't vocalize it. She just continues, but she's resentful. And eventually, my cousins who are staying with her, she kicks them out the house. And my grandmother had to go build a house, find a land for them, and go build a house for them, which in its own is very... So much is happening. The family doesn't talk about it. They turn on my mom.
Yes, of course, because people turn on breadwinners, which is right? So interesting. Yeah.
They turn completely on her. And in return, because she's also a secondary destroyer archetype, she turns on them. And then she doesn't just turn on them. She's like, I am sinking this ship. And, you know, because the other thing, and I talked about this in the book, I say, beware of the fixer that turns destroyer, because the fixer is what built this thing. If they also destroy it, they know exactly the bricks that they laid to break it, to build it, right? Exactly. They will just go and they know exactly how to break the foundation.
Yes.
It's okay if a destroyer is coming after something that a fixer has built, but they voted because the fixer has the energy to keep going. It's okay if another destroyer is coming after a destroyer that is now renovating, because they have never destroyed, they've never built it. The problem is when the builder is destroying it, because they know how they laid the foundation. So then that literally happened with my mom, and fights happened. By the time I was like 4 or 5, all I saw were constant fights in my mom's family, constant, right? And my mom was also not only just destroying herself, also abusive towards my sister and I, right? So also now turned everything on my sister and I. And it's interesting because my dad always says to me, your mother was never like this. They were together for 16 years before they had us. And he says she was so nice, and she was never like this until she went back home. And then, like, something happened to your mother when she went back home. She which, and she stepped into a whole different being. And yeah, she switched archetypes, you know? And that's literally what happened. And my dad has read the book and he's like, wow, you shed so much light for me. He was when all this was happening. And I wish I had been able to sit down and talk to you about it. But reading this book has helped me heal and understand some things. And even my aunts on my father's side have said that.
They've read the book. Wow.
Yeah, so because they've seen the dynamics with my parents, right? Because my mom didn't just turn on a family. She turned on everyone. Because when you step into destroyer mode, you're in your shadow. You are destroying. So she went straight, she tapped into her anger and everything, her work, her co-workers, everyone felt it.
And do you think her losing her job, I think she resigned or she just...
Yeah, she resigned.
Do you think that was part of the destruction? Like, this boat is sinking. I'm not even going to have an income because she was the main income bringer, supporting everybody, the grandmother, the cousins, you, and I think two aunts or something. And she just left her job. I mean, I just found that so strange.
No. What happened, right? These are the exact things this is what happened, right? The exact words, I'll tell you. My uncle comes back from exile. I'm about 9 years old. It's like the Mandela era. But he has studied. He studied in Germany, in East Germany, then East Germany. He has studied in, I think he came back around about 1991, 1992, between those 2 years, or 93. I know it wasn't before. I think it was 92 or 93. It wasn't 91. Anyway, he comes back. He studied in Scotland, all that. You know how we are as Black people. Oh my gosh, ufunde nabelungu. He has studied with white people, you know, and back then, now it's not such a big thing. But everybody then goes, he must be good with money. He is the one that is now going to rescue us. Because remember, my mom is problematic at this point. Just hectic level. When I say hectic.
I know your story.
Everyone's drama is on the streets, you know. Neighbors know what everyone is up to, and she's letting it rip. You know, there are no secrets. If you go to my village knows our business. Everybody knows our business. Funny enough, they even follow me on Facebook, and they can verify. Go to yes, this is true. This is how it went. They are very public. So anyway, then my uncle comes back, and he's a sweet one. But everyone, my mother included, believes that my uncle has studied with abelungu, so, and he's a man on top of that. So he's going to do better than my mother, you know, because making money is equated with education, right? What does my mother do? She quits her job and she says to my uncle, I have done my duty.
Yes, it's your turn
to take over. Exactly. She not only quits her job, I don't think I put it in the book, she signed over her us, she made him the guardian to Honey and I. Then she signs over her piggery business. She had 200 pigs. He is still till this day something that I'm trying to get her to change because he's passed on.
Yeah.
Beneficiary of her property. Who inherits her property. She signs over everything. She had a boutique, everything. And she quits her job. She's like, here, I give you a start, everything. It is now your turn. I have done my duty.
And then with your uncle, things turn on him again. I mean, you repeat the same pattern as the family.
My uncle takes it on because he's a sweet one. And I talk about this in the book, that the sweet one is sometimes equated, and he's a runaway, right? So a sweet one runaway.
So he's definitely me because I'm both, my primary archetype is a runaway and then the secondary is the sweet one. So he's that.
So my uncle takes on all of us.
Yeah.
My grandmother, my great-grandmother passes on, but he takes my grandmother, my mom comes to live with us, my sister, myself, my two cousins who are grown, by the way, go to university. My three cousins, actually, three cousins who they are grown, but the girl, she moves out after 6 months because I think she clocks it. She's like, this is a disaster. And then his younger brother, as I shared in the book, his younger brother sometimes stole things.
Remember, and he would not say nothing, you'd forgive him over and over.
Right. My grandmother's like, forgive him, forgive him. She's also a sweet one. At the end, by the time I was in high school, when my grandmother passed on, like, I had never experienced this until my uncle. With my mom, regardless of what was happening, you know, before my uncle arrived, my mother was, there was always food in the house, always everything, always plenty, school fees paid. We were in boarding school. She was driving the latest cars because fixers have energy for days. They can make money and attract money. A fixer can support you, be stressed about it, but you'll notice that they're not broke. Sweet ones go broke, Shane. My uncle went broke. You know, there was never any money because if you think about it, I think there were about 5 adults not working in the house, 1 adult working, 2 kids, right? And none of those kids are his, you know? He doesn't have a wife in the mix, nothing. At the time, he didn't, right? He's just pouring, giving, giving. None of the adults are contributing financially. My mom did because fixer, you know? Yes. So me as a destroyer, what do? I let it all rip. I go to my dad's place and I'm like, listen, dude, you're going to have to step in. Me, I am not going to be part and parcel of this. I will live there, but this is how this is going to play out. Remember, I'm 12 at the time. I'm caught up doing everything because the fights at home are so hectic and I'm also getting beaten up. I call the cops, I lay cases, call my dad, and I'm like, you know what? Register myself for therapy. I'm on it. I'm like a full-fledged adult, like they've never heard of therapy for Black kids. I'm like, whatever is happening here, I want no part of it.
Nothing to do with it,
I tell my dad he has to get more involved. He listens because they're no longer together. He's remarried. He doesn't know what is really, truly happening. He just shows up. He brings what he brings. He supports. This time, most of the time, every vacation, we then go spend it with him. He steps in with our schooling, every single thing, because I was like, this ship is sinking and it's bad. And I was the first one to see it, by the way, at the age of
12. Yeah, it was a very sensitive child,
that my uncle had done yet. We still had food every day. Nothing was happening, but everybody thought I was a crazy child. I sensed it. I felt it. I remember the day when I came home and the TV had been taken. I thought we'd been burglared. And then I'm listening in, my other uncle has taken all the furniture and sold it. That's when I was like, whatever is happening here, I'm reading. And I can see as a child, I'm seeing. By the time we were in matric, my uncle, as a runaway, left his own home. Things become so bad. He left his own home. He found a wife, didn't bring her home. That should tell you everything. Until things really got bad for him, then he brought her at the last. He found a different house.
I read that he also left his job because, I mean, this is the part that I want to get to, you know, not to cut you, but where another one in your family decides, you know what, it's better ngasebenzi, it's better to not have money because it's not working out for me anyway, you know, it's just killing me. And he left, he ran away and he found his own. He was, and also the sweet part of him, he did not kick you out like the mom, like your mom kicking the cousins out. Rather leave it as it is and then start something new. That's so interesting.
But he couldn't kick us out, right? Like the sweet one, he couldn't fight and throw people out.
Yeah, I see. You know, this is not in your book, but it's just coming now about the breadwinner role. I mean, understanding archetypes, I know anyone can be a breadwinner, but not anyone. The fixers are meant or are more suitable to be. But if a situation calls for you to be a breadwinner, I think anyone can do it, provided they are in their golden side of the archetype. I'm just wondering if the breadwinner role should be passed on from generation to generation. Is it a role that should be taught? In other words, how do you feel? Is it a normal role to have a breadwinner in the family? Or is it a social construct based on oppression and all that, and colonization, especially in the Black community? Are you understanding the
Put
question?
it like this. Maybe it is a normal role, but it is not meant for a lifetime. It is not meant for generational things that, like, you pass it on as the baton, because that is what in the book I mentioned, right? What my uncle had hoped would happen with me.
And I remember they were saying it's your turn, the uncle and the
It's
aunt.
my
It's your
turn.
turn. You are educated. You have an MBA. And meanwhile, you decided, I'm gonna go to Sri Lanka.
Right. And also remember, I left at 17 for a reason. So I was able to remind them, remember from the age of 12, I have warned you guys. So, Mina, I bring out receipts when I'm talking. I'm not fighting and screaming like other breadwinners before me, but I'm like, but guys, you remember I warned you? Do you remember this happened, this happened, this happened? No. You know? And there have been family meetings. There was on my uncle's funeral, a
Did
family
you love
meeting.
the episode? If you'd like to listen to more, you know what to do. You'd simply have to subscribe. The subscription link is on all of my social media bio. It is also on the show notes right here on this episode and all the other episodes' show notes. You simply click on the link and you follow the process, and we will see you on the other side. For now, I wish you love and all green lights, as always.
Thank you.